Hi everyone. While most people make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, when I was growing up, we experienced it on Fridays too. You see, when I was in high school, Fridays were unique. While most days were spent studying Torah and Talmud in the morning and evening and secular studies in the afternoon, we would have a very different schedule on Fridays. First of all, secular classes were not held. We even got out of our shiurim and learning seder a bit earlier. And so, in that sense, Friday had a Havdalah, a difference to it, true. But the main Havdalah of Fridays in my high school experience was the capstone of the week, the weekly shmooze, or Musar discourse, delivered by the Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Chil Yitzchak Per. It's hard to describe the experience of Rabbi Per's shmoozin, or Musar talks. Their uniqueness was not in their philosophical complexity or their humorous delivery. The talks were also not just ordinary commentary on the issues of the day. They often were, and sometimes quite often were not. But what made Rabbi Per's shmuzin unique and different was their depth and simplicity. He had this incredible ability to draw moral and ethical lessons from common experiences. His detailed descriptions of ordinary life were extremely finite and exact. He was able to focus on the most minute of detail and shed light and draw lessons from that which otherwise would have gone unnoticed. It was an incredibly sharp contrast to the image of the Rosh HaYeshiva's status and stature as someone raising the standards of the yeshiva and community, who probably needed to keep his eyes solely on the bigger picture, and also his size. He was an imposing figure at about 6 feet 5 inches. But weekly, I'd be mesmerized by his lessons. Like the time he would contrast Shabbos in the hospital room of Rav Aaron Cutler, where was this sense of calm and sense of Shabbos, and that of life on the outside. He brought you right there, right down to the bing bing, Dr. Brown, to the OR stat, which he described in his description. I remember, and I mentioned this in shul the other day, his vivid description of something as simple as paying for breaking a light bulb that you broke by accident in Pathmark over 35 years ago. And it stuck with me when I accidentally broke apart a jar of pickles at ShopRite a few weeks ago. There too, the Rosh Yeshiva contrasted our ethical approach to life and that of our neighbors as well. Yes, Havdalah Bein Yisrael La'amim, the separation of the difference between Am Yisrael and the nations of the world, was a big part of the values he wanted us to acquire and have. I found myself returning to the Friday Havdalah Musar sessions a lot this week. Not only did I find myself there as Rav Per's family and students mourn his passing this past weekend, I found myself there because of a strange pasuk in our parsha and an even stranger comment from Rashi. You see, in the penultimate pasuk of the parsha, we read, "V'yisem li kedoshim ki kadosh ani Hashem." You should be holy to me, for I am Hashem, and I am holy. I separated you from the other nations to be unto me. And what does Hashem expect from us? Why is holiness so exclusive to us? And Rashi comments, "Imatem uvdalim, if you are distinct and separate from the other nations, then you can be mine. Vimlav, if not, you're just like Nebuchadnezzar and his friends." Wait a second. Hashem is so stuck in the black and white contrast that we're either totally separated from the other nations or we're totally on the other side of evil, that of most evil. I mean, King Nebuchadnezzar, the destroyer of the first Beis HaMikdash, there's nothing in between. The Havdalah contrast is so distinct and strong. Why? But Rashi doesn't finish over there. Rashi adds, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah pointed out, Minayin shelo yomar adam nafshi katza bibsar chazir. How do we know that one is not supposed to say that he or she is disgusted by non-kosher meat? Or by the way, yeshi lo bosh kelayim, I cannot be comfortable wearing shatnez. Aval yomar efshi, a person should say, I do have that ability. But umayaseh, what can I do? V'avisha b'shamayim gozar alai. And my forefather, Avinu, Hashem said, I cannot. In other words, we are to separate ourselves purely for Hashem, separating ourselves from sin and accepting the yoke of Shemayim upon ourselves. Now, what does Rashi add to his contrast above? Why not stop with the Nebuchadnezzar thing? And what's the difference between when I separate myself because of my personal displeasure or pleasure in denial by Hashem? Why does it make a difference if I like or don't like a kosher meat if I ultimately reject it for whatever the motivation? Now, if Rabbi Peer were exploring these questions, he'd probably have had an anecdote here. One of the ones that I recall hearing from him and find appropriate to our questions went something like this. A farmer once slaughtered two calves and immersed their hides in a lime bath. One hide was made into a sturdy pair of boots. It served the owners well for a few years. But when they were no longer usable, the boots were unceremoniously dumped into the garbage. The other hide became a parchment of a Sefer Torah that was respected and venerated by a community for 100 years. When it was no longer usable, it was buried in a cemetery with tremendous respect. In my mind's eye, I can almost see Rabbi Peer pausing dramatically here, taking off his glasses, and then asking a simple but obvious question. What determined the difference between the two calfskins? He would have asked. The answer he offered after a pause was short and sweet. Lishma, preparing the hide for the purpose of the mitzvah of writing the Sefer Torah. Lishma was a big theme of Rabbi Peer's. He would often note that people often have different reasons. He called them cheshbonos for doing the right thing. In fact, most of the time, people do the right thing because of their cheshbon, because of their calculation. Maybe it's nachas for the parents. Maybe it was the right thing to do is good for the shidduch, or the right entrance into the right social circle. That, Rabbi Peer would constantly remind us, is not lishma. Lishma is to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. It's the thing you're supposed to do. And I believe that's exactly why Rashi quotes Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah about how to make havdalah between Jews and a Jewish approach to ethics and life and that of a non-Jew. The non-Jew thinks ethics and the right thing to do is for him or to choose. And while we might choose to obey or not obey, it's not our right to choose what the right thing to do or think is. We're different. We're servants of Hashem. He told us what's ethical. And it's our duty, willing or not 100%, to follow. And so, in that regard, we are muvdalim. We've been made different. We get told what the right thing to do is. We just have to choose to do it. In that regard, we're different from the philosophy of the rest of the world. And perhaps that's why Rashi is setting up a huge contrast between listening to Hashem and being put together with Nebuchadnezzar. Why comparison to a moral despot like the evil Nebuchadnezzar? Perhaps it was because in Nebuchadnezzar's mind, he wasn't a despot. In his mind, he was the most moral, ethical person in the world, and he should know because he was allowed to define ethics and morals. Not only that, he was not just a brutish conqueror, he was a musician and poet. Indeed, the Gemara tells us that he had the power to captivate spirits, just like, and perhaps almost better, than David HaMelech, King David, the author of Sefer Tehillim. So strong were his comparisons, says the Gemara, that a malach needed to come and slap him in the face. In fact, Rabbi Yosef Shalom Eliashib noted that even with the great expressive emotional spiritual talent, Nebuchadnezzar had no ability to capitalize on it. That's the difference between a healthy Jew and Nebuchadnezzar. If you can capitalize on Jewish spirit, turning it into a practical, achievable action, lishma, for the greater good of Hashem, wonderful. But if not, you're no better than Nebuchadnezzar. Many times Rabbi Peer would make that havdalah, that differentiation to us. Those messages seem even clearer today, where our world is constantly redefining what is ethical and ethical behavior. There are movements to preserve humanity in an ethical and equitable manner, while those claiming to do so have been reawakening anti-Semitic tropes and equivocated terrorism, barbarism, and hostage taking, even of defenseless elderly women and children. Could the behavior we're experiencing, even the bastions of education, serve to remind us of why Hashem made the Havdalah that he did? I think Rabbi Peer wouldn't have minced his words. He would have told us, and he did tell us, that the events in the world have a special message for you and me. And that message is that without a Torah, there are no true ethics. Wishing you and your loved ones a Shabbat Shalom and a Shabbat Shalom to Ball.